This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, Jason Gibbs, Joy Production Manager. It's Radiothon time. We still need Joy and we need your support. If you appreciate our free podcast service, our voice for the LGBTI community globally, and the volunteers that make our service possible, please sign up, renew your Joy membership, or make a tax-deductible donation before June 30 to keep our service possible. You may win a prize. Head to joy.org.au and click on either the Become a Member or Donate tabs to support us. If you appreciate our podcast service, let us know in the comments section when making your donation. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and on iTunes.
It's Tuesday, the 6th of June. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, David Gale.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation. SMS 0427 JOY 949, email onair at joy.org.au, or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
Tonight's Informer. On tonight's show, we will speak to Wayne Tinsey, Executive Director of Edmund Rice Education Australia, which is a group of Catholic schools. And later on, we'll be talking to Vicky Ryle, Head of Clinical Practice at Headspace. Last week in The Age, we noticed a report, Catholic schools to launch a plan to fight homophobia. Catholic schools have received criticism for their reluctance to adopt the Safe Schools program and until now have provided no alternative plan to create a safer and more inclusive environment for gay and transgender students and LGBTI families. Edmund Rice Education Australia has changed that by rolling out an alternative to Safe Schools to train teachers to stamp out homophobia and transphobia. Tonight on The Informer, we are joined by Wayne Tinsey from Edmund Rice Schools. Are you there, Wayne?
Yes, I am, David.
Okay. Welcome to The Informer. Can you tell us, firstly, how is your program different to Safe Schools?
Yeah. Our program, David, is basically a set of resource materials for teachers to give them from an informed perspective and also from a research and also from a Christian perspective, the capacity to become more familiar with situations in which young people might find themselves in, to give them the skills to understand the reality of LGBTI young people, and also give them the encouragement and the support to be able to stamp out bullying in these areas. So these materials aren't meant for young people, and we don't provide, you know, a range of or a suite of resources for young people who are coming to terms with their sexuality or exploring different possibilities. That's not our aim. Our aim is purely to skill teachers to be able to respond in a more appropriate way, particularly in the bullying domain.
Yeah, look, I saw that in according to your own research within your group of schools, around about 16.8% of high school students are same-sex attracted or bisexual, according to research. Does that mean this is the sort of response that you've had to come up with anyway?
Well, I think any group of schools has a responsibility to protect the entire student population, and we'd be confident that our schools are the same as schools everywhere. This is our Australian population, and I think for a long time, Catholic schools and from a Christian perspective, we've been very good at critiquing other interventions in terms of support for anti-bullying work amongst educators. And we felt, given our charter and the principles upon which we base our vision for Catholic education, we felt a need to, instead of just critiquing, to actually respond and provide some potential Catholic vision for how we would stamp out homophobic and transphobic bullying.
It's sort of been a bit of a two-way street here, because you could be actually critiquing other schools' responses, but they've also been critiquing your non-response, I suppose. Is this response your version of safe schools, or is it to distance yourself from safe schools, or is it to stop the criticism as well? Is this why you're putting this in place as well? I mean, if I was a parent, let's say I was a same-sex attracted parent, and I had a child that I wanted to send to school, I would probably go, you know what, I can't go to Catholic schools. But obviously you're putting something in place that would seem certainly more attractive to me.
Yes, you're probably unaware that there are two Catholic schools in Australia that actually belong to the Safe Schools Coalition, and those two schools are Edmund Rice Schools.
Yeah. And
those schools joined, that they've been members for a long time before this became topical. And so we've given those schools the option to do what they need to do for their young people in their communities, and we've put no pressure on them either way to either remain in the coalition or to leave the coalition. But certainly we have felt the need to respond, to a void that we see within the Christian dialogue and the Catholic dialogue around supporting young people. It's not pushing any agendas. We don't hope to be antagonistic towards any group, either within or outside of the church. It's simply a group of schools that pride themselves on having an inclusive agenda, doing our best to support and include young people, all young people.
Look, also, can you tell me, how is this program going to be funded? Is this funded by accessing money from the Safe Schools? You know, the state government here in Victoria from 2018 is providing Safe Schools funding all across the state of Victoria. But is it funded through that, or is it another way?
No, there's no funding required, David, for this program. The materials have been developed, and we're probably thinking that we won't develop anything further. Simply, we had a working group of educators and counsellors come together about 8 months ago and look at the issues that were facing us, look at our charter and the way we see our vision for Catholic education, have a look at the research, and we were supported by Professor Peter Norden from RMIT, in the sense that he'd previously undertaken research in the area from a Catholic perspective, and Peter was good enough to lend us his support and rework some of his materials, particularly strengthening areas around transgender that were kind of missing from the original suite of research that he undertook. And we developed three core documents. One was a statement of principles, and another one was a document of frequently asked questions that might be asked by parents, teachers, young people, etc. And the other one was just a simple book which contained what we think is a fairly balanced research base, and used that as a sense of, you know, why we would go into the area. And we've offered them to our schools, simply offered them to our schools, and the idea would be that schools would, and teachers in our schools would, consider the materials and develop their skills. It's not a program that will be rolled out to young people. It's not a program that will be rolled out to parents. It's simply about skilling teachers to combat bullying the way that we skill them to combat domestic violence, all sorts of social issues. This is a core one for us.
So, okay. It does sound very good. It sounds like all the students will benefit from the program, not whether they identify as GLBTIQ. It sounds like everybody will benefit from this program. It is good to hear. And look, thank you so much for your time tonight. Wayne Tinsey, Executive Director from Edmund Rice Education Australia. Thank you once again.
Pleasure, David. Pleasure.
Look, on the other line, we do have a teacher. This is a teacher who prefers to remain unnamed in this segment. He's working in a Catholic system, in a Catholic school, and I just sort of wanted to find out how he felt about this sort of program. Are you there, anonymous teacher?
Yes, I'm here. Yes.
Okay. Look, you've listened to the interview that we've had with the head of Edmund Rice Education. What do you think about this campaign that they've introduced into their schools?
Well, it was interesting to hear the proposal. It's not a program that's going to be rolled out for students. It was talked about in terms of empowering teachers or fostering teachers' understanding and their ability to be able to work with students. But I think there are a lot of questions that could be asked about that. For example, is this going to be dealt with publicly in a classroom? How are students who identify as LGBT in schools, how are they going to be empowered? What sort of pride is going to take place? Mm-hmm. It didn't sound to me as if it was going to be rolled out in a public way in the system. It sounded more like resources and reading material for teachers. Are they going to be conferencing and counselling students in private sessions? Are they going to be dealing with this in curriculum, in a public way in the classroom? So I have lots of questions about that.
You're a teacher in the Catholic system, so you obviously can see what's happening. And, of course, you don't have a Safe Schools program. So what happens normally when, you know, let's say there was... Because they're really trying to address bullying in particular, or that's what they're naming it as. What happens in the cases of bullying? What do you normally do at the moment?
Well, there are programs that take place at different year levels that are part of curriculum that might be done in particular subjects or in programs that operate in schools. And, what my question would be, would that material... it was stated quite clearly that it wasn't going to develop resources for students, so it sounds like it's informational for teachers, but how is it going to be rolled out? How are LGBT students going to be allowed to identify or to be comfortable with their sexuality? Because, for example, LGBT students now who might be in independent or state schools can be quite open about their identity.
Okay. Look, one thing that I did notice, though, was that it is at least a start, I suppose.
It's a start. It's a start, yeah. It's a start, but it's, there are a lot of Catholic schools and it's just Edmund Rice School, so it'll only be in those schools. So it's a start, but it's pretty much the tip of the iceberg and there's a long way to go.
Okay, yeah. Thank you very much, anonymous teacher from the Catholic system. Thank you.
No worries. Thank you. Bye.
Young men suffer some of the most serious mental health issues of any group in Australia, but tens of thousands are staying silent rather than seeking help, while suicide remains the biggest killer of young people in Australia. Today, Headspace has launched the Fathers Campaign, urging parents, in particular fathers, to support their sons. First up, we're going to hear from NRL rugby great Nathan Hindmarsh about the purpose of this campaign.
The Fathers Campaign is just about starting a conversation with your sons or your daughters. You know, it's about getting that conversation going, making sure your kids feel comfortable in coming to you or being able to come to you for anything really that's going on in their lives. So that's pretty much what the campaign's all about, and I'm very happy to be a part of it.
Nathan's a great spokesperson and also the patron of this particular campaign. And now we're joined by Vicky Ryle, Head of Clinical Practice at Headspace, on the line to talk more about this campaign. Welcome to The Informer, Vicky.
Hi, thank you.
Look, it's great to have you on the line. First up, the launch of this campaign was today. Can you tell us why Headspace has put out this type of call?
Yeah, look, it's predominantly because there are, exactly as you started the intro, there are too few young people, young men, seeking help. And we think that, you know, there's a whole range of reasons that is, one of them being sort of masculine Australian culture. And I guess thinking that if we can change some conversations between men, in this instance between fathers and sons, that may... you know, even have some broader cultural impact. And
yeah, look, I mean, the statistics say that young men suffer some of the most serious mental health issues. Only 13% of young men with mental health issues actually seek out professional help. I mean, that is an extraordinary statistic.
Yeah, it's really worrying. And I mean, your audience, you know, the LGBTI young people are also often reluctant to seek help. So I think... You know, this campaign's focusing on young men, but I wonder if young men who identify with any of those communities might be even less, you know, motivated to seek help. That statistic, 13%, actually came from an Australia-wide survey as well. So it matches Headspace's information that young people present services much less than young women.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I was quite shocked to learn that myself. And, you know, these sorts of campaigns are very important. Headspace is the National Youth Mental Health Foundation providing early intervention, just for those that don't know, for mental health services to 12 to 25-year-olds, along with assistance in promoting young people's well-being. This covers four core areas: mental health, obviously, physical health, work and study support, and alcohol and other drug services. And of course, we're talking to Vicky Ryle, the head of clinical practice at Headspace. How do young people access the services of Headspace?
Look, young people can contact any Headspace centre directly themselves. So it's pretty easy. Ring up or go in, talk about, you know, find out the different options that they might offer you for appointments. If you want to find out a bit before you go, every single Headspace Centre, and we have 100 open across Australia, has its own webpage on the headspace.org.au website. So that will tell you a bit about what services they offer and what options are. We also have some national programs run, eHeadspace, digital work and study program, and a school support program.
I think also because it's a nationwide service, it's actually quite well known by those in the 12 to 25 year age group, which I'm sadly not in anymore, but it is nationwide and there are so many different places. What sort of numbers of people access your services?
Headspace nationally has seen over 330,000 young people. So, I mean, the numbers are pretty incredible.
That is.
And, yeah, I mean, we've only been around for 10 years, but, I mean, that might not sound like a lot, actually, if you multiply it out by 100 centres, but some of that, we've opened 100 centres in that time. So 10 years ago, 10 centres opened, the following year, another 20, and so on and so forth. So we've been building the network incredibly fast. And the minute a centre opens in each area, lots and lots of young people and families come pretty quickly.
Yeah. Look, also, many of us in the LGBTI community are also parents ourselves. So what sort of signs should those parents amongst us be looking for with our children as far as, you know, the risk factors of people in the area that we were talking about before?
Absolutely. Look, the information, we've got really good information as part of the Fathers Campaign on the Headspace website. If you just go to the front page of headspace.org.au, there's really practical tips about starting conversations and also signs to look out for. And it's helpful for both mothers and fathers, obviously. But the signs to look out for in terms of a potential mental health difficulty in a young person at the beginning are things like changes to sleep, changes to appetite, changes to concentration, not wanting to do things that your young person might have really enjoyed previously, I guess, obviously, a lowered mood. And for young men, it might not be sadness that you see. It might be sort of that they're cranky and irritable. And any and one of those things for a short time on its own is perfectly normal.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like most teenagers.
If you're starting to see all of those things happening together for prolonged periods of time in a way that's really different for your young person.
Mm-hmm.
And I always encourage parents to remember that they know their young people. So if you're worried and you think things are different, listen to that in yourself and have a conversation.
Back in the 70s, when I was in that age group, it was sort of like considered, oh, it's just a phase they're going through. But obviously, you know, it's sort of monitoring and, yeah, having a relationship with your children.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really what this campaign's trying to support and encourage and give some practical skills. I mean, you really often hear that parents really want to do the right thing most of the time. That's exactly what parents are trying to do, and we need to focus on providing some skills so that they're in a better position to have those conversations in a way that's safe.
Okay. Vicky Ryle, Head of Clinical Practice at Headspace, thank you so much for spending some time on The Informer tonight.
Thanks for supporting our campaign.
Lastly up tonight, we have in the studio Jess Innes-Irons. Now, she's doing a project at the moment as part of her research for a Bachelor of Arts honours. And the project is really interesting. It's all about social media engagement following the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando. Welcome, Jess.
How are you going?
Look, an unusual sort of topic to come up with and to do. Why did you choose this?
I came into, I guess, developing this project really in the days following the shooting last year, where I found myself having a lot of conversations with people who felt really impacted by what had happened, despite the fact that it was really geographically distant to what we were doing here in Australia. And looking at kind of that fallout of why people had this deep sense of, I guess, emotional distress, and looking at how that had a relationship to their own queer identity here in Melbourne.
It was an event that was so specific to the LGBTIQ community, and I suppose that's why it's very focused in that. It's not like just a normal terrorist attack. I mean, I'm saying normal. There is no such thing as a normal terrorist attack. But instead of being one of the attacks that we might have become more familiar or desensitised to, this was specifically on our community, wasn't it?
Yeah, I would argue that. I think it's been quite interesting when you do look at the media coverage in the days that followed it, that there was kind of that debate as to whether it really was a hate crime. There was also arguments about the religious connotations of it, about gun control in America, and this idea of terrorism. And ultimately in America, it's been ruled to be a mass shooting rather than an act of terrorism. But ultimately, you know, there is this really important queer identity in what happened.
So you're trying to find out how people express their grief, I imagine, on social media. What are you finding? I mean, you obviously haven't been able to correlate all of the responses to your survey, but what sort of things are you finding? What can you tell us about?
I'm not in a position to say a huge amount as yet, because I am still collecting data.
Yeah.
But what I'm finding is that it's a really genuine experience that people had, and that outpouring of grief we see, particularly on Facebook, is a lot of where my study's aimed.
Yeah.
But we see it on Twitter, we've seen it on Instagram, we see it every time that there is a global crisis, that people have this really deep sense of impact that it could have been them.
Yeah.
And that they kind of recognise some sort of commonality between what's happened and the fact that we're all human at the end of the day is really kind of what's coming out to start with.
Is this just a different format of being able to express grief? Because, you know, before social media, people might have talked to other friends about it, or maybe they'd have they found different ways of expressing grief, maybe through attending their church or talking to their peers within a community or, you know, whatever. So social media's sort of changed all of that. Is this perhaps solely a way that some people express grief and emotions?
Yep, for some people it is. And essentially what I am looking at is how we perform ritual response to process grief in response to loss and trauma and crisis events. And so what I'm actually seeing is that we have these practices that we engage with following some sort of trauma event, and really we're performing these same practices in social media space, but they are functioning slightly different now.
Yeah, I mean, that is very different. It's funny because I was trying to remember, and I did your survey last night. I was trying to remember whether it was, you know, I suppose because it's almost a year ago now, I was trying to remember back to see what sort of things I remember from other people's posts. So it is very timely, but it sort of, you know, becomes, I think I'd blurred it in thinking that people had put up their posts and changed for marriage equality, where there were certain things where people could change their profile photos. There certainly wasn't that for Orlando. And there were certainly vigils here in Melbourne, as I remember, and all around the world. That's another way of processing that grief. Mm. I just get a bit concerned that, you know, sometimes people want to do something and they feel a little unable to, and that's why they do turn to social media.
Yeah, and I think there's an element of that. These things are scary, and part of, I think, what's happening with crisis is that we have a huge exposure to this. Social media has contracted our distance to these events because suddenly, you know, there is no time, there is no space, because we have instant access to it. So there is kind of this, how do we deal with something that really confronts how we understand the world? And I think social media is a way that we are opening up those conversations with people where we do feel confronted.
And certainly feel helpless.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, really, how do you deal with a crisis like that? And especially when we are seeing this instance of global crisis occurring again and again, and I guess that's the benefit of my research, is that while I'm looking at it from a queer perspective at this point, you could actually take it and apply it and look at how we process grief in response to global crisis in different circumstances. And ultimately, I'm essentially aiming to develop a framework as to how we can be more mindful of how we engage with social media and create a better understanding of why these are real experiences for people and why they are important to people.
And we're also just, you know, in my mind, I'm just thinking about the positive responses, but there would have also been negative ones as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm seeing extreme reactions of emotional turmoil, both positive and negative. And I think that's what I really like about this study, is that there was, I guess, elements that really confronted people that they found incredibly challenging. But there's also elements that have found, that have helped people feel really positive and supported in the fallout of these events.
Okay, look, it's great to hear about your study. There will be a link to the actual study, and if you want to take the survey, in about an hour or so's time, we'll have a link on the podcast and that'll be up on the Joy website as well. So please, you know, if you have a chance and you want to remember about it, next week, next Monday night, is a special Informer episode because it will be the 1-year anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando. So be listening for that next Monday night. And if you get a chance, please take a look at Jess's survey and complete it. It doesn't take very long and it is well worth it for the study. That's it for another episode of The Informer. We'll be back tomorrow night at 6:30 p.m. to bring you the day's big news. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. We'd like to thank all of tonight's guests, Wayne Tinsley, Executive Director of Edmund Rice Education, the anonymous teacher from the Catholic system, also Vicky Ryle, Head of Clinical Practice at Headspace, and Jess Innes-Irons, who you've just heard from about social media engagement following the Pulse nightclub shooting.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.